When we talk about the childcare crisis, I know one of the biggest issues is staffing shortages. Karen, I'll start with you. Can you kind of tell us about that issue and how it's kind of playing out at your facility?
Staffing has always been difficult just because the amount of funds that are in the early childhood education system to pay staff is not sufficient, and it's not anywhere near what a public school teacher, for example, would make. But it's gotten a lot worse in the pandemic because so many other employers who are hiring entry-level workers, for example, Target, Walmart, Amazon, they've raised their starting salaries to $15 and sometimes even $17 an hour. And so we're trying to recruit those same entry-level staff because we do not have the funds to pay staff with, for example, a bachelor's degree in education. And so we have to be able to match that $15 to $17 an hour, and we just aren't able to. Here at the LACC, we were able to increase our starting salary this year from $10 an hour to $13 an hour for entry-level employees who have just a high school diploma. But you know, that's still not enough to keep up with those other major employers who can offer a lot more. And so it's just taking us a really long time to be able to fill vacant positions. And so sometimes we may have a teacher position that's open for several months before we can hire someone to fill it.
So what does that mean for the families and how your program operates?
So we're a little bit more fortunate than many other programs. We receive a lot of additional funding for additional services that we offer, like Early Head Start, ECAP, which is a state-funded Head Start program. And so our staffing levels are higher than most other programs to start out with. And so we can kind of try and move around staff to make it work. But for those programs who don't have that additional funding, you know, they're only staffing what they need to cover a classroom. And so when they don't have a position that they can fill, that a lot of times means that they can't open that classroom. And so there may be a classroom that could serve 20 preschool children that cannot be open because they cannot hire a teacher for that classroom.
So what does that mean for the families? What are we seeing statewide, Madeline?
What we're seeing is wait lists, and Karen can speak to hers, but especially in Kent and Sussex County, we're hearing the wait lists are hundreds of families long and many months. And when you have an infant now and you want to go to work now and you're being told, oh, maybe in May, we might have an opening. That's pretty frustrating, especially since, you know, in a few more months, you'll probably be looking for an opening in a toddler classroom. So we're seeing families having to really juggle, get on wait lists, even when they get on wait lists early, not getting in, having to take time off. And we're seeing the lowest women's workforce participation in three decades in this country because of this crisis.
Well, that was kind of going to be my next question. What are the broader implications of this? You know, especially you mentioned it really impacts working moms.
Right. So we're hearing from our employers statewide that they're having a hard time bringing women back into the workforce, recruiting many more open positions, hundreds more than many employers statewide would have. We're having employers having to make more accommodations and flexibility, allow people to work part time. All kinds of implications for the economy. You know, everybody from restaurants to banks to hospitals telling us that the childcare crisis is absolutely a factor in them not being able to hire and offer the level of service that they would like.
And your organization, I understand, was maybe part of a coalition that was launching a letter writing campaign. Tell me a little bit about that. What was the goal behind that?
Well, we're looking at the level of investment, as Karen mentioned, in terms of the state investment in childcare, which drives a lot of, you know, as she mentioned, who they can hire and how they can invest. So I think as of today, we have something like 69 organizations that are part of that coalition, and over 100 folks have contacted the governor. Karen, what would you add?
I would just add that I think childcare providers across Delaware, whether they're able to participate in those advocacy efforts that oftentimes happen while they're working during the day and serving children or not, are behind this advocacy campaign. And so, you know, in addition to the 69 organizations that are part of the First Date Pre-K, we just have to also remember all those many hundreds of providers in Delaware who are pushing for this also.
And what are some of the things that those advocates are asking for? What can the state do better?
I think one of the things is to increase the funding for purchase of care. So purchase of care is what Delaware's form of subsidized childcare or assistance for families who are low income to pay for childcare. And so right now, Delaware is only paying 70% of the 75th percentile of the market rate, which is very confusing. But basically what it means is that the amount of money that a center receives for a family who has subsidized childcare really isn't equal to the market rate for what a different type of family might be charged for that space. And so it's difficult for centers to be able to hire adequate staff, have adequate materials at those funding levels.
And the other question I wanted to ask you was, you know, we talked about how this impacts, you know, the economy, impacts working mothers. How does it impact the children? Because this isn't just about childcare. This is actually about early childhood education as well, isn't it?
I think the way that it impacts the children is really tied to the staffing crisis. So we know that children, especially young children, need consistency in order to learn best. And because it's so difficult to fill staffing positions and because the turnover is so high, there's a lot of inconsistency. And so in my classroom, if I'm a child in a preschool classroom, I may go through several teachers in one school year or several assistant teachers in one school year. And each of those is coming in normally at an entry level and doesn't have a lot of the skills that they need to be able to effectively do their job. They're learning those skills on the job. And so it's a constant cycle of trying to teach new staff the skills that they need to be effective teachers, and then those staff leaving and we're starting all over again. And that, I think that has the biggest effect on the children.
So Madeline, is there anything else going on in the on the state or federal level that can help address some of these issues?
Well, of course, we're watching closely what happens with Build Back Better. And that would be a big infusion of resources both into our childcare system as well as our pre-K system, and would require the state also to match and step up. So this is something Delaware, you know, should do and will have to do pending Build Back Better. So we're certainly watching that closely and hoping we can leverage that to do more. And then there are some other policy things underway. So, you know, Karen mentioned the low level of funding. It basically comes out to something like 50% of what it actually costs. So organizations like the LACC are having to raise additional resources or cobble together money from different sources, move people around. When we look at that compared to sort of what a high quality program should cost or would cost, it's an even smaller fraction. So, you know, in other places, other countries spend 3-4 times as much as what we spend on our young children. And the state now is forming a working group to look at what is the true cost of quality care. Karen and I just participated in a working group looking at a salary schedule to address some of the issues she mentioned around recruitment and retaining high quality educators and trying to keep them in the early childhood space so that they don't just move to the higher, you know, grades where they can get paid more and have benefits. So there's a lot of areas that need addressing and some are underway, yes.
And I understand there was some funding from the American Rescue Plan that was directed towards this issue. Was that helpful at all?
Yes and no. Yes, it was helpful. It's what we use to raise our starting salary from $10 to $13 an hour. But it's temporary. And so we are just hoping that there will be some funding coming in to make up that gap. You know, a lot of other providers didn't make the decision to do permanent salary scale increases because they don't know if that money will be here next year. And so if it's not here, then what do we use to pay those salaries that we've now increased?
Right. And those resources from the state were called stabilization funds. So they stabilized the industry to reimburse costs, which went up during the pandemic. There's increased costs of PPE, of facilities, and of keeping staff with smaller groups of children and separated, which is not normally the practice. Normally you can combine classrooms and do more creative things with staff, but because of the pandemic, costs are higher, then recruitment is harder. And so most of the money has been spent to reimburse expenses that went up and have already been spent. It's not this ongoing infusion of money that childcare needs.
And I think depending on what kind of surveys you look at, I think I saw that the annual cost of childcare can range from like $9,000 to, you know, close to $20,000 a year in some parts of this country. What is it that makes it so expensive?
I think the biggest thing that makes it so expensive is the number of staff you need to care for children. And so, you know, if I'm in an elementary school classroom, I may have one teacher for 20, 25 children, right? So that's a pretty high ratio of staff to students. If I'm caring for infants, I need one teacher for every four infants. And so the ratios are much lower. And of course, staff is the most expensive part of the program.
And why hasn't there been more investment in childcare and early education?
Well, I think as a society, we're catching up. Our public, you know, investments are catching up with both what the brain science say, which is that most of the brain is formed before five, before kindergarten, as well as with our current workforce. You know, most parents are in the workforce. Most mothers are in the workforce, and the rest of the developed country has invested in this really as a public good, as something that every child deserves, every family deserves. But the US hasn't really gotten there. And that's part of the intention of Build Back Better, is to start to move us in that direction.
And so what would you tell, you know, policymakers about the return on investment?
Well, there are decades of research about every dollar invested before kindergarten yields, you know, 10 or more dollars in either societal savings, you know, lower crime, lower use of healthcare and public assistance, and increased educational outcomes. Interestingly, now we have decades of research that show multiple generations of benefit. So children who got this, their children are better off who got quality early childhood. So we certainly have the research that backs up the need to invest. And now it's a matter of prioritizing it in our state budget and finding the revenue to do it.
I think policymakers also really need to look at what's going on in Delaware and just take a look at what are the readiness rates of Delaware's kindergartners. Every year, kindergarten teachers assess their students to determine, are they, at the beginning of the school year, are they kindergarten ready? And Delaware has very poor kindergarten readiness rates. And if we want to address that to make sure that children are starting kindergarten ready to learn, then we need to start before kindergarten.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the time that you took today to tell us about this issue.
Thank you.